This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The wicked ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
London calling. This is London calling on Longwave. London calling. This is Westminster.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Calm down. I'm okay. With a combat unit that's armed with automatic weapons.
Come on, Mrs. Jones. You've got to go to your second job now. You've got to earn extra money to pay the bedroom tax.
I'm very lucky. I've got a second job in a chemical plant. Yeah, I'm making fluoride for Syria. They're shipping it to Syria.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
My lords, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to join Chris Everard in an undisclosed location deep under Buckingham Palace in Winston Churchill's war bunker.
Never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
God damn it, boy! These Brits are coming to get us!
Welcome, my friends, to the show which never ends.
My husband and I are not amused.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
Deep from inside the former communist bloc, where we now torture American citizens in Poland and the Balkan states, we're tuning in to the Chris Everard Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Chris Everard, and we are broadcasting live on the Truth Frequency. Welcome, everyone, no matter where you are on this wonderful planet, whether it's the morning, whether it's lunchtime, whether it's early evening, whether it's evening or in the middle of the night like it is in Australasia. I'd like to say welcome, one and all. We've got an unforecast, huge thunderstorm with lots of fresh rain falling on us here in the Mediterranean. I'm actually not live in London. I'm actually in the Mediterranean today. And we've got this unforecast rain. Why is it unforecast? Well, we believe that it's something to do with weather modification. And if you've never heard that phrase before, then I suggest you do some research, because there's plenty of patents run by various large corporations. Various scientists have actually registered these patents, and there is weather modification happening right now, and that's why we've got thunderstorms and rain in the Mediterranean that's totally unforecast. Now, we have a very, very special guest for today's show, and we're going to be discussing political assassinations. If you are a politician and you speak the truth, or you want to reveal how this power structure operates, it won't be long before you end up with a bullet meeting your head. It's happened to John F. Kennedy. It's happened to his brother. It's happened to Martin Luther King. It's happened to many, many other people. And these lone gunmen are not just crazy loonies who just live on their own. Many of these lone gunmen have been on the payroll of the CIA, MI5, MI6, and many of the other military intelligence organizations. What I've been doing this week is I've been working on the Enigma Channel, and we have a new magazine coming out for the Enigma Channel. And also, I've been working on a new TV guide as well that's going to actually give you a guide, like a normal TV guide, except this time it gives you a guide to what is actually on the internet worldwide. And it's a new kind of concept for a magazine where you can just click the title of any interesting program that's in the guide, and it'll play right there and then, and we're working out a system so that you don't get any of the rickety stuttering in the videos that you find on these video sharing websites. What we're also doing this week is we're also writing a new iBook all about the plague masters and the work of ages. This is an ancient plan that came about in the 11th century. It's really basically where rabbis who were living and running a school of the Kabbalah on this 11th century country wine estate in the east of France convinced the aristocratic owners. One of them was Hugh de Champagne. These rabbis convinced the aristocrats that they would give the aristocrats the highest secrets of the Kabbalah, how to summon demons and how to summon angels, how to conduct seances, how to actually foretell the future by interrogating spirits. That's what the rabbis promised these aristocrats. And in exchange, the rabbis asked the aristocrats to go and invade Jerusalem and to kill Saladin and kill the Muslims and actually take back Jerusalem in the name of the nation of Israel. And this new iBook is historically tracing exactly what we see going on to this day. What we see is we see Catholic and Christian armed forces being sent in to actually kill brown-skinned Muslim people, not only in Israel, in other countries of the Middle East, but we also see it in other places where there is solar power that can be harvested and also oil. And what we're seeing is a $17 trillion military deficit that's been run up by Mr. Obama. I should call him Mr. Obama. And the Bush family, and storming Norman Schwarzkopf. And this $17 trillion deficit is mostly being spent on missiles, uniforms, bullets, guns, you name it. And they're being aimed and fired at brown-skinned Muslim people who the BBC tell us, Hamas, Al-Qaeda, Taliban, the BBC tell us that these are the baddies, but how often do we actually see those people on the BBC being interviewed? We hardly ever see them, and as far as I'm concerned, the war on terror is actually fake, basically, and it's being done to actually generate higher share prices in the corporations that actually manufacture these missiles and these guns. And what we know through the Freedom of Information Act and also through the declarations of the congressmen and the senators is that we know that more than half of those people, I'm talking about the congressmen and the senators, more than half of them own shares in companies like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, and they're actually making money by creating rumors of war and creating war zones on our planet. That's the only way that the share price of an armaments company goes up, is to actually create war. If we take the bigger historical view of things and we go back to the time of the Knights Templar in the 11th century making a pact with these rabbis to go in and actually create a kingdom of Jerusalem and a kingdom of Israel, and do that in exchange for the highest secrets of the Kabbalah, what we can see today is that there's a very, very high number of people in the White House and in the Pentagon who have dual citizenship between Israel and the United States of America. And we have to ask ourselves, why? Why is it that there's so many people who are pulling the strings at the Pentagon who have dual citizenship? What is it? What is their top priority? Is their top priority in their loyalty to the United States of America, or is it to Israel? And the reason that I'm speaking about Israel this week is because the BBC is absolutely packed, it's jam-packed with headlines about so-called rockets that have been fired by Hamas onto Israel. And the BBC claim that these rockets are causing havoc, so much havoc in Israel, that Israel has had to retaliate and kill nearly 160 people. Of course, that Israel is using jets. Each jet costs about $30 million. And I've actually published the photographs of these so-called rockets that are meant to be coming from Hamas, basically they're homemade fireworks in metal drain pipes. That's what the so-called Hamas rockets really are. And you can see those photographs on my Facebook page while it lasts. That's facebook.com/Christopher Everard. If you want to look at my website while we're running this show this evening with our special guest, then that's ChristopherEverard.com. And at the Enigma channel, I'm presenting a new TV series called Gods of the Ancient World, where you'll see me actually filmed in Luxor, Cairo, inside the Great Pyramid, and at many of the other great temples of Egypt. We've gone all over the world making this new TV series. We've been inside the fantastic Gothic cathedrals of medieval Europe. We've gone absolutely everywhere. We've gone to more than 8 different countries in the making of this TV series, Gods of the Ancient World. That's enigmatv.com, E-N-I-G-M-A-TV.com. And now it's time to introduce my guest. He's from Scandinavia. His name is Olli Damgaard. Olli, are you there?
I sure am, Chris.
Wow, it's an extremely loud and clear... You're the loudest and clearest guest I've ever had.
I'm sorry about that. It's normally the other way around. People complain about me being too soft-spoken.
Oh, I see. Now, I've read up a bit of your biog, and it says that you were actually born in Denmark.
Yep.
I've been to Copenhagen quite a few times. I've got lots of Danish friends. A few of my Danish friends, they were unemployed for quite a few years, and they started up their own company. And they've built it up into a multi-million dollar corporation, and they're now employing more than 1,000 people. And Danish people are very, very clever and ingenious. The food is pretty good in Denmark as well. And Copenhagen has got a very ancient center with very beautiful old buildings. But then it says in your biog that you then left Denmark and then you ended up living in Sweden. Is that right?
I moved when I was 8 years old. My family moved to Sweden, so that's I grew up. I was born in Copenhagen, and then once we came to Sweden, I grew up way out in the forest there.
I see.
So big change.
I see. Right. Well, what we're going to be discussing this evening, and I want to say this in all seriousness to the listeners out there. And we are actually being broadcast on Radio Stirling in Scotland on this first hour. And the second hour, we are being simulcasted with Radio Calabria in the south of Italy. Is that this is a very serious show with serious subjects. We are actually going to be discussing political assassinations. And would you agree with me, Olli, that basically there's lots of good political leaders that have come and gone. And the reason they've gone is simply because they've been murdered. And that my opinion is that the world would be a better place if they'd lived. But basically, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, JFK, Robert Kennedy, they've all been murdered and politically assassinated. And I include in the list John Lennon as well. John Lennon was a very political-minded person. And he actually invested a lot of his own money into a peace campaign. Would you agree with me, Olli, that the world would potentially be a much better place had we not had all of these political assassinations?
I would totally agree with you. I spent 30 years looking into these type of assassinations, and I tell you, the reason why these people have been taken out is because they've been standing for all these beautiful ethic, moral things
I see.
That we cherish as normal people, you know, like peace and unity and
yeah.
and brotherhood and all of these beautiful things. The power that is behind more or less all of these, I would say, mm-hmm. are into death and destruction, wars and terror. That's their agenda.
Absolutely. And like I said at the beginning of the show, there's a lot of these politicians in the Senate and a lot of other politicians in the Congress. And also, let's not forget that there's a lot of British politicians as well. Not to forget also the British royal family and some of the other European royal families and they all have very serious investments in the companies which are manufacturing guns and tanks and missiles and battleships and this type of thing. In actual fact, Queen Elizabeth II has just launched two supercarriers, and they are 65,000-ton supercarriers, and British Aerospace has also invested in its own drone killer warplane. It has no pilot, and it is judge, jury, and executioner all in one deathly package. And they've gone and named it after an ancient god where children used to be sacrificed to this god, and it's called Tanaris. And Tanaris is the name that British Aerospace have chosen for these new this new breed of airborne drone killer. Can I just ask you, Ole, what's your views on these drone robot wars which we're now facing?
I think it's one of the most coward ways of committing terrorism that has existed. And the people behind it, this power elite that we're going to talk about, or they call themselves the elite. Mm-hmm. I prefer calling them the minority or the lightless. There are not very brave people, not courageous people in any way. They've been ruling this world for such a long time, hiding in the dark, in the shadows, and controlling the world by unseen strings and hands that so normal people have not been able to see what's going on.
Yes.
And I think it's very important when you look at all of these things we're going to talk about, also their agenda and these assassinations, it is way beyond national borders. It's not a matter of what is the situation in the US, England and France. These secret brotherhoods and networks and groups like the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, Committee of 300 and so on, are handpicked people from all these countries having very secret meetings, very secret agendas, and very secret actions that normal people have never heard about.
Yeah.
So, and their agenda also is on a way beyond national borders. It's on a global scale. They look for total control globally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, the first person, I suppose, that springs to mind when you bring up the subject of political assassination, and by the way, the subject of political assassination is hardly ever mentioned in the mainstream media. What the mainstream media want you to do is to be silent, to go shopping, and then die. That's what they want you to do. They do not want you to have critical thinking faculties, and they certainly don't want you to start teaching your children about people like JFK and why he was actually shot through the head. The first question I've got for you, Ole, is, in your opinion, do you think there was multiple gunmen, or do you think that there was one gunman for the JFK assassination?
No, there were multiple, many, many. I can name them all. If you got the time, I can go into extreme detail.
Name them. Is one of them James Files?
Yeah, he was the guy behind the picket fence.
Okay, so he was on the picket fence. The other question I've got is, was one of them Sam Giancana?
No. But Sam Giancana was in Dallas that day. He was the Chicago, the leader of the mob there, or one of the leaders. And he was the assassination was carried out by elements from the CIA, a top secret team of assassins called Operation 40, people from the Dallas Police and the Secret Service. And the shooter, everybody, the mob, the CIA, and Operation 40, all of them brought in their own shooters, different teams in different locations. And,
okay, so we had James Files near the picket fence. Who were the other gunmen?
Okay, if you look at Dealey Plaza from above, many times when they carry these assassinations out, I mean, you are very aware of this, that they, for some reason, they love this, the pyramid shape of streets or or the Freemasonry symbols.
Oh, absolutely.
List, or eternal flames and so on. And if you look at Dealey Plaza from an aerial point of view, you will see that the very pyramid-shaped type of streets go like in
absolutely.
A pyramid shape.
Dealey Plaza is actually a delta-shaped pyramid from the bird's eye view on a map.
Exactly. And in the middle of this pyramid, coming from the bottom, going straight up through the bottom and up till the top, that is what is called the Main Street, where the motorcade was supposed to go straight from downtown Dallas, from the airport, mm-hmm. and then straight through Dealey Plaza and to the World Trade Center, where he was going to give a speech a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But the route was changed on that day. So that when the motorcade came to the bottom of the pyramid, they made a 90-degree turn onto Houston Street and then a 120-degree into Elm Street, which was an absolute no-no when it came to security because it just slowed the whole motorcade down to a very, very dangerous slow movement. When it turned left from Houston over to Elm Street, it passed the so-called Deltex building. And then when the motorcade continued, it passed the so-called Texas School Book Depository, where the lone patsy Lee Harvey Oswald is said to have been
positioned. And did Lee Harvey Oswald actually fire a bullet?
No, absolutely not. He was not involved at all. I tell you, the story about Lee Harvey Oswald is totally incredible because he was actually trying to stop the whole assassination. He was very aware of what was going on, and he's the guy who sent telegrams and so on warning about this assassination. And then instead, he ended up taking the blame for it. He took the fall for it, being the guy that they pointed out, the one.
That's right. He most certainly did. Apparently, he was arrested, if I'm right in saying this, Lee Harvey Oswald was actually arrested in a cinema.
Yeah.
What transpired is that he was then put into the custody of the Texas Rangers, and a man called Jack Ruby then shot him.
Yeah, it's not the Texas Rangers, it's the Dallas Police Station.
It was the Dallas Police Station.
Yeah.
So they were not Texas Rangers then?
No.
The guys with the big hats?
No, the one with the white hats, that was the homicide division in Dallas.
I see.
But I tell you, if you want, I can just go quickly through the different shooters, the positions
yes,
of the
yes,
shooters.
Please.
Okay, in the Deltex building, the one on Houston Street where you turn left, on the second floor, there was a mining company that was a front company for the CIA. A man, a mobster from L.A. Called Hale Braden, he was there to open the back door to because James Files had come from Chicago with weapons
yes.
and so on.
He
parked the car behind the Deltex building.
Okay, let me just get this name right. His name was Braden.
Hale Braden. Braden.
Yeah, could you spell his first name for us, please?
H-A-L-E, but also he went under different aliases, Jim Braden and so on. But he was his...
Braden. Okay. All right.
His task was very minor in the whole thing, but it was for him to open the back door and let the shooter in that building was a hitman from Chicago, one of Sam Giancana's... personal hitman.
I see.
One of the lieutenants, his name was Chucky Nicoletti. He was the guy that fired from that building. The spotter in that building was a man by the name of Nestor Izquierdo.
Right. Now, can I just ask you to spell his second name?
Oh, it's Izquierdo. Izquierdo.
I see. And who is the other person?
Listen, I think maybe it's better if I reverse a little bit in history so that you can get a feeling for who the members in these different teams are.
Yeah.
If that would be okay.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that I'm asking is because I've made a series of films called The Illuminati. I started making them 10 years ago. It's the first political film documentary series that's gone into five different parts, and there's actually parts five and six gone into production for this year. And I've built up a database of people who are involved in this network of global secret societies. And many times, it does seem that they are interrelated. And when I say that, it seems that these people are actually the members of the same groups of families. But what they do is they actually use different names to make it look as if, you know, they've come from a different area, a different region, a different country, and that they're unrelated. And what I've discovered over the years is that the best way of starting the research is to double check the names of these people against my database and also against websites that list the kind of, you know, names that have been cropping up in history that are usually related to some form of political assassination. And when we're dealing with the mafia, you cannot really seriously, study the mafia without actually studying the Vatican as well, because the Vatican Bank historically has always been laundering the money which the mobsters have earned from selling drugs and also doing assassination hits. Now, Ole, we have a break coming up. It's a very short break. It's only 2 minutes. Do you want to tell the listeners your website details so that they can look at the website while we're actually doing this broadcast?
Yeah, for sure. That would be great. My website is lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com. You can find me on Facebook under Light on Conspiracies as well. And one of the main books I've written in this on this subject of assassination is called Coup d'État in Slow Motion. Coup d'État in Slow Motion.
Coup d'État and, in Slow Motion.
Yeah.
And where can people read about your book and get your book?
They can only get it through my website. I've been into this for about 30 years.
Yeah.
And I've had friends that was murdered around me due to this type of research. I had to leave Sweden because of it. So this book is based on, it's been called A Bomb of Truth from Michael Moore's agent and so on. So it's I've really, really put in a lot of effort into it over many, many years.
I see. Well, that
Degrees of Insanity with Donnie Gilson.
Sunday on Truth Frequency Radio.
The world is a terrible place because the good people are assassinated before they can make any political changes. That's the subject which we're discussing with my special guest, Mr. Ole Damegaard. And this show is being broadcast right now on Crackly Old AM via Radio Stirling in Scotland. In the second hour, we're being simulcasted on FM with Radio Calabria in the south of Italy. My name is Chris Everard. This is the Chris Everard Show. Normally, we're live from London. Today, we're in the Mediterranean, and we're suffering an unforecast thunderstorm. We believe that it could be something to do with the weather modification kind of chemtrails, which we saw in the sky in the previous few days. And we're also broadcasting on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. That's 90.7 Denver, Colorado FM, and obviously you can also get us on the internet. That's truthfrequencyradio.com, and there's about 5.5 million downloads of my shows that have been going on over the last couple of years. And if this is the first time you've heard me, you can find me at christopher everard.com. that's EVERARD. And Ole, would you like to remind the viewers or the listeners of your website again?
My website is called lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com. And okay. My book in this topic is called Coup d'État in Slow Motion.
coup d'etat in slow motion. Now, before the break, we were discussing who the gunmen, who the shooters were on the JFK assassination. I've actually seen an interview that was filmed with James Files. He is actually a US prisoner, and he's been in prison for quite a long time. He's serving a sentence for some other crime. And you mentioned a man called Braden. You mentioned Izquierdo. Who were the other gunmen?
Listen, I would like to go back a little bit in history to make to explain how this whole thing was put together.
Okay, take it away.
In the late 50s, early 1960s, under the supervision of President Dwight Eisenhower, a task was given to his vice president, Richard Nixon, to form a team of top secret assassins that could be used to take out leaders and opponents globally or wherever they had a problem. The task was given to Richard Nixon. He got some people, hardened CIA veterans that had been shown their colors in Guatemala, in Iran, and other places during the 50s. And he brought in people like Ted Shackley. He was also known as the Blonde Ghost. He was later one of the absolute tops when it came to covert operations in the CIA, part of hundreds of assassinations globally. There were also E. Howard Hunt, who was later, he was very central in the JFK assassination. He was also one of the Watergate burglars and very central in the whole thing around there. There were another man called David Attlee Phillips, once again, also one that later became, he became the chief of the covert operation for the Western Hemisphere. I mean, that's the whole Western Hemisphere globally. So these were very, very experienced CIA people. And what they did was they went to Miami and they started recruiting exiled Cubans that had just escaped from Cuba after Fidel Castro had taken over the island. These were mostly people from the military, from the army, from the Air Force, the police, and some of them secret agents from the Batista regime and so on. Very hard people, disciplined, violent.
I see.
And this group was named Operation 40. They were, to start with, there were around 86, 85 men and one woman. And they were trained in Florida, they were trained in Louisiana, and in Guatemala as well. They were trained in everything from jungle warfare to explosives to you name it, whatever type of assassinations, they trained them to do this.
I see.
Their first task was to take out Fidel Castro. They tried several times but failed. And then after that, they were used in the JFK assassination. And the members in this Operation 40 are so central in a long, 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 long row of assassinations and different terror acts. So I've spent many years really digging into how they are actually the ones connecting many of these assassinations. So
I see. Now, I've got to ask you this. Does the name Barry Seal ring a bell with you?
He was part of Operation 40.
He was part of Operation 40?
Yeah, he was recruited very young together with Lee Harvey Oswald. Lee Harvey Oswald was not part of Operation 40, but both of them were in the air patrol under David Ferry and other people. So he was recruited in there that way. And later, one of the pilots in Operation 40, flying them in and out on covert operations, he was also one of the main pilots in the Iran-Contra scandal, where they flew weapons out of the States, weapons that were stolen from the National Guard, and then down to countries like El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, where they armed the Contras army that was totally created by the CIA and Henry Kissinger and other people. And then when the planes returned, many of them being medevac, you know, medical aid planes, they brought in tons and tons of cocaine to an airport, to start with an airport in Arkansas, a small little town called Mena in Arkansas that had an airstrip. And all these drugs were flown in these military planes and received by no one less than a very little known governor by the name of William Clinton, Bill Clinton, and his companion, Dan Lasseter. These were some of the main people receiving the drugs that was then distributed all over the states, to the Crips in LA and so on. Now, so that's where the whole crack epidemic started, was through this Operation 40 and Iran-Contras.
Okay, now coming back to this chap called Barry Seal, am I right in saying that he was eventually found shot in his car? Is that correct?
Yeah, he was killed just a week before the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme was killed. And there's a lot of connections with the assassination in Sweden. It is not a Swedish assassination. It's totally connected to these global events that we're talking about.
Hang on there. What you're saying is that a Scandinavian Prime Minister, Olof Palme, was assassinated, and it's got links to this drug running and this assassination team in the United States of America. Is that right?
I would humbly suggest that after 30 years, in my opinion, absolutely no doubt.
I see. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've read reports about the state of Barry Seal's body, and he was found shot in his car, and apparently there are some reports that claim that he had a little book in his pocket, and he had some pieces of paper, and he had various telephone numbers, and one of those telephone numbers was the private office of George Bush Sr.
There you go, yeah. Because George Bush Sr. was actually the paymaster of Operation 40. He was the guy that, as a young man, funneled the funds from the military-industrial complex, from companies like Standard Oil, United Fruit, and so on, into this team of assassins that was then used on many, many different occasions. And one of his right hand in this group was a man called Felix Rodriguez, who was very central in the Operation 40. He was also one of the Watergate burglars. He was also the guy that tracked down and ordered the murder of Che Guevara in Bolivia. And the man that carried out the assassination was a man called David Morales, very high up in the CIA, part of Operation 40. And he was in Dealey Plaza when Kennedy was shot. He was also at the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was shot in 68, really? Together with two other very high CIA officials. They were there as supervisors. They were not the ones doing the actual shooting and so on.
Wow.
Can I just
stay on the point of George Bush Sr.? I want to say to younger listeners of the younger generation who listen to my show, we are actually discussing the father of George W. Bush. We're discussing George Bush Sr. And George Bush Sr., as far as I am aware, he was either the owner or one of the senior directors of an oil company called Pennzoil. And as far as I'm aware, they owned some oil rig properties, and one of those was loaned or used or borrowed during the so-called Bay of Pigs assassination plot against Castro. Is that right?
He was very much involved in that. That's the whole thing around Operation 40. They were very central in this whole thing.
I see.
And when it comes to George Bush Sr., Junior, George is a joke. His father is one of the major players in this thing globally. You look into assassinations globally, this name is so central again and again and again.
Well,
also wars and terror acts and so on. George Bush Sr. pops up all over the place.
All over the place, I see. Well, I have in my archives a very strange memorandum that's been signed and written apparently by George Bush Sr., and it is actually telling the authorities, the police authorities, his whereabouts on the day of the JFK assassination at Dealey Plaza in Texas. And apparently, George Bush Sr. was not that far away, was he? Geographically, he was just a quick hop, skip, and a jump away, and he was actually in that area on the day of the assassination. Is that right?
No, he was actually inside the Deltex building.
Oh, he was inside the Deltex building.
Yeah, he was the paymaster and one of the controllers of Operation 40. He was there on location. And if we go back, now that you know a little bit about Operation 40, that now I can go back to describing the position of the shooters and where they were.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back in the Deltex building. The shooter's name was Chucky Nicoletti. The spotter was Nestor or Tony Izquierdo. He was a man, a mercenary, very closely associated with Operation 40, even though he wasn't a real member. There are statues of this Tony Izquierdo in Miami, Florida to this very day.
Wow. Where,
yeah. And in that Deltex building as well was a man by the name of Johnny Rosselli. He was a former hitman for Al Capone in Chicago.
Yes.
But in later years, he became like the liaison between the Chicago mob and the CIA and so on. Because the CIA and the mob are so embedded with each other, so it's very, very hard to see a difference sometimes. You know, when the mob is needed or they need to take out someone on national ground soil, they just use the mob. When they do it abroad, they use their own assassins and so on.
Okay, what you're basically saying is that when an assassination is called, there usually isn't a lone gunman from one of the intelligence services. They're actually contracting in whoever they think is suitable for a particular contract hit.
Lone gunmen are more or less unknown when it comes to professionals, I would say. Lone gunmen are the ones that they blame the thing on. They want a lone crazy guy. They use old Roman templates of how to carry these things out. And one of the main ingredients when it comes to assassinations is the lone crazy guy. They want him to be alone because then, by law, there's no conspiracy. There's no planning, no motive behind it. And crazy, once again, no motive. He was just crazy. He went up and shot the guy. Boom, story closed. And just bury the guy and end the story. That is why every single time when you hear about a lone crazy guy doing a mass shooting or an assassination or whatever it is they want to try to pinpoint on that person, be aware. I can almost guarantee you that it's not what it seemed to be.
I see. Now, there is a very, very famous piece of cine footage that's been made by a gentleman, I believe he's a Turkish-American, called Mr. Zapruder.
Mm.
And the Zapruder film clearly shows the motorcade. It emerges from behind a street sign. And there are some very interesting things that we can see from the Zapruder footage. First of all, we see JFK putting both his hands up to his throat. In your opinion, how many bullets actually struck JFK?
It is hard to know. I would say about four. But there were plenty of shots fired. Some of them hit the car, some hit John Connolly, some hit the curb, some, you know, because if I go back to describing the whole setup, you will see that there are multiple shooters.
Yeah.
I can just go quickly through them, you know. So that was the Deltex building. You had Johnny Rosselli, Chucky Nicoletti, the shooter, the breakdown guy or the spotter. There are normally two or three people involved in these when they commit assassinations.
Yeah.
You got one shooter. His job is to totally focus on hitting. That's the only thing he needs to worry about. Then you have the spotter, who is a radio operator with binoculars, checking escape routes, checking the surroundings, checking that everything is so he can warn or give directions. He's also the guy that gets the go-ahead from wherever the operation is controlled from. So normally two, and then sometimes they have a third person, a so-called breakdown guy, who as soon as the shots are fired, the shooter just throws the weapon to the breakdown guy and gets out. You know, the spotter makes sure that the escape route is clear, that the shooter just leaves as soon as possible, and the weapon goes in a different direction.
I see.
The breakdown guy, where they dismantle the gun, and he's also the guy who takes care of whatever, if there's shells or any type of evidence. That's the breakdown guy.
I see. Now, in addition to the Zapruder cine footage, we also have some black and white photographs taken immediately after the assassination. And there is one very, very interesting photograph that does show a young man. He does have some facial and bodily similarities to a young George Bush Sr. In yep. your opinion, do you think that that is George Bush Sr. or is just a lucky lookalike?
I tell you, you can sew off my right hand if it's not him.
I see.
And I had people who knew him at that age. I had people who have worked directly under him that has pinpointed him straight away. That is George Bush.
I see.
So the thing that you were talking about was that he phoned later that day made a phone call saying that he was in Fort Worth.
That's right.
Just trying to get alibi, you know, because he needed to just create an alibi. But he was there on location.
I see. Now, there's also some other photographs. It seems that the police arrested or they took into custody very temporarily or put into a police van three chaps. They looked like kind of tramps. They looked like vagrant men. Yeah. And I've seen reports where there's been a positive ID on one of these tramps. And there are several authors saying that Howard Hunt was actually dressed as a tramp. And he is actually, according to you, one of these satellite members of Operation 40. Do you think that Howard Hunt was one of these tramps?
No, I know he was not. He was there on location. He was one of the, he was in charge of one of the teams of shooters. Jack Ruby was charge of one of the other shooters. But the three tramps, the one that they say was E. Howard Hunt, and I do agree they look quite a lot alike.
Yeah.
But his name was Chauncey Holt. He was a CIA operative, also working for the mob. And his task was to bring they were actually real Secret Service IDs to the different shooters, to the different members of the hit team. He brought them in from Los Angeles, and his part was that as soon he should deliver these badges. They were actually Secret Service badges. And after that, his order was when after this shooting to run to this train wagon. It was a locked wagon, and just wait there. And then the whole idea was that this train should move out and take him out there into security. But the other ones, the tall tramp, his name was Charles Harrelson, and he was a shooter, a mobster from Louisiana. He was supplied by Carlos Marcelo in Louisiana as one of the shooters. He's actually the father of actor Woody Harrelson. And then you have the first one. He is called Frenchie in sometimes, but his real name was Charles Frederick Rogers, and he was working for the ONI and also for the mob. He was also indirectly connected to the Martin Luther King assassination. And so on. So we see the same players appearing again and again.
Right. Now, moving on, we have then the Warren Commission report, and we also have an autopsy, and there's some very interesting photographs of JFK's body actually on the coroner's table during the autopsy. I should say to the listeners that the official story, if I've got this right, is that all of the damage that was done to Governor Connally, I believe that his hand was shattered by a bullet, and apparently all of the bodily and head wounds inflicted on President Kennedy, according to the official report, all of that damage, all of those injuries were due to one bullet. Is that right? Is that what the official report said?
The official report says that there were three shots fired, three bullets,
yes.
And one missed the car totally, another one hit the JFK in the back, and then, in the back, sorry, and then the last damages, all of these damages, they had only one bullet left to blame it on, you know?
I see.
There was a man in the Warren Commission called Arlen Specter, who later was a candidate. He was trying to run for president later in the years.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up with this absolute, it's a total joke, this whole story about the magic bullet, how it goes down, hits JFK in the back, then changes direction, comes out through his throat, stops midair, turns right, then waits for 1 second, 0.5, goes forward, then stops, turns left, hit John Connolly just underneath the armpit, goes through his body, comes out by his right nipple, stops, turns right, turns left, crashes into his hand, and exits, and then make a U-turn, and then lodges in his left thigh, where it later popped out in the hospital, totally pristine. I mean, there's absolutely no damage to the bullet at all. That is why it's called the magic bullet, and it's an absolute lie. And wow, everything in the official story builds on this lie. And they needed to get the whole thing down onto three shots to be able to pinpoint it on Oswald. But we're talking multiple shooters. I haven't even started naming them yet. So
I see. Okay, now, what happened at that autopsy is not really something that's ever discussed on the mainstream media. Am I right in saying, Ole, that JFK's brain went missing?
Yep.
It actually went missing, his entire brain. What I'm saying is that today, right now in 2014, we still do not understand what happened to JFK's brain.
The brain was, I mean, the final headshot blew most of it up.
I see.
It was an absolute horrific damage to his head. But normally in a case like this, you take out the what is left of the brain and you slice it up to show direct, what is called trajectories.
Yes.
And these type of things. Also bullet pieces of bullets and so on. But this brain just vanished. It vanished. And it said that somebody must have disposed of it due to lack of space. And we're talking like the FBI headquarters.
I see. Well, it's highly unlikely, isn't it, really, considering it's probably the most famous assassination of the 1960s era.
This is standard procedure when it comes to these top assassinations. I tell you, evidence,
you mean the material. The destruction of bodily evidence is a standard procedure?
Absolute standard. And manipulating evidence just, you know, like with Robert Kennedy, like there were thousands of photos from the crime scene that was burnt.
Same thing
with Olof Palme, you know, tape recordings of radio traffic, you know, from the police communication, burnt and destroyed. Then they appear again, then they disappear, then they were burnt again. It's like standard procedure.
Wow.
Because the thing is, you know, the truth is very simple. The truth is the truth. Whatever happens, there is a truth in it. But when you're in a conspiracy and the more people that are involved, then this becomes like such an entangled network of lies.
Yes.
Because you're trying to cover up something. And the more you lie and the more people involved in it, the more it grows. And then they had to try and stop it, you know.
Yes.
And then that's when they start to get rid of their own. They start get rid of witnesses, police officers, and, you know. And around the JFK assassination, I have a list of more than 300 people that have died in strange ways.
Wow.
And in Sweden as well, a long, long row of people have died in Sweden as well. And it's standard in these cases that they have like a cleanup team that goes in afterwards and just eliminate whoever is the problem.
Wow. Now, what I want to say to the listeners, especially the younger listeners who are waking up and they've stumbled on my documentary films and my broadcasts over the years, is that what we are discussing in this broadcast is not really something that you could ever describe as a conspiracy theory. We are discussing actual people, actual events, and a lot of this is corroborated. And all you need to do is you need to just not take our word for it, but actually do your own research, and you'll find out that what me and Ole are discussing has a very strong basis in truth. And we have a very
real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio. London calling. This is London calling on long wave. London calling. This is Westminster.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Calm down. I'm okay. With a combat unit that's armed with automatic weapons.
Come on, Mrs. Jones. You've got to go to your second job now. You've got to earn extra money to pay the bedroom tax.
I'm very lucky. I've got a second job in a chemical plant. Yeah, I'm making fluoride for Syria. They're shipping it to Syria.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
My lords, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to join Chris Everard in an undisclosed location deep under Buckingham Palace in Winston Churchill's war bunker.
Let's never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
God damn it, boy! These Brits are coming to get us!
Welcome, my friends, to the show which never ends.
My husband and I are not amused.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
Deep from inside the former communist bloc, where we now torture American citizens in Poland and the Balkan states, we're tuning in to the Chris Everard Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Chris Everard, and we are broadcasting live on the Truth Frequency. Good morning, good day, good evening, no matter where you are. This is Chris Everard broadcasting live. I'm usually in London, but I'm in the Mediterranean today. We're suffering an unforecast thunderstorm with rain. We believe it could be related to chemtrail activity, which we've seen over the last few days. If you're unaware of chemtrail activity that's been going on, just type into any web engine chemtrail, then patent, the word patent, p-a-t-e-n-t, and you'll find that there are many patents to do with geoengineering and weather modification. And, you know, today's weather was not forecast, so it looks to us today as if this rain that we've suffered has been actually created artificially. And my special guest is Mr. Ole Damgaard, who's an author. He comes from Scandinavia, and he's joined us today from Spain. Ole, are you there?
I sure am.
Okay, now, picking up this second hour, what I'd like to do is I'd like to discuss assassinations in the modern era. And before the break, I said that assassinations are really used by the hidden hand of the elite to actually adjust political outcomes at elections which they do not agree with. And just in recent years, we've had political assassinations in Europe which have really changed the political scene. The most notorious ones that we've had just recently is a political assassination in Spain of a lady politician who was shot on a bridge. That happened just a couple of months ago. Then we had Pim Fortuyn. He was shot as he was coming out of a radio studio. And many Dutch people in the Netherlands believe that if Pim Fortuyn had not been assassinated, then he might very well be the world leader of the Netherlands to this day. And then before Pim Fortuyn was assassinated, we then had the notorious assassination of Olaf Palme. Now, Ole, would you just like to tell the listeners a little bit about Mr. Palme and the situation that led to him being assassinated?
His name is actually Palme, Olaf Palme, and both he and another foreign, the foreign minister of Sweden, Anna Lindh, was assassinated, or the Palme was assassinated in 1986. And Anna Lindh was assassinated the year after 9/11, on 9/11, in Sweden as well. There's a very clear pattern before elections when, if this elite group or elite few are not getting the result they're wanting to, that they have not managed to manipulate the population of a country into whatever direction they want them to do. If they can have not succeeded in that, then sometimes there are these either so-called terror acts or assassinations, where they try to, through an old Roman tactic called problem, reaction, solution, they secretly create a problem to get an emotional reaction from a population saying, my God, something needs to be done. And then they turn towards me that secretly created the problem, and I will then be welcomed with my solution.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see very often before elections and so on that this happens. The train bombings in Madrid was just 2 days before a major election. The Anna Lindh assassination in Sweden was just 2 days before the election about the euro or not. You have the mass shootings in Norway, where Norway was just about to leave NATO because they did not, they wanted to totally get out of the war activities in Afghanistan and Iraq. And then these mass shootings happen, forcing Norway back into the corral, you know, back in line.
Yes.
Or now, you have many of these different assassinations.
I see. Now, do you know much about the situation regarding Pim Fortuyn?
I know too little to talk about it. I know about it, and I don't know.
I just want to say to the listeners that Mr. Fortuyn was a professor of Marxism, and he'd actually been a member of the Netherlands Labour Party for a very, very long time, I think nearly 20 years. And he'd actually created his own political organization called the Pim Fortuyn List. And like I said, the man was gunned down as he was leaving a radio station. And there are many, many Dutch people who believe that if he had not been assassinated, he would now, today, in 2014, most probably be the leader of the political hierarchy in the Netherlands, and that he would have probably, you know, sort of led the country into a different avenue. And I'm afraid that if, you know, you've stumbled on our broadcast and this is the first time you're hearing these types of subjects being discussed, this type of political assassination and the adjustment in the political spectrum by killing people who have views and opinions and policies which are anti or in opposition, if you like, to the elite, this has been going on since the time of Julius Caesar and even before then, because if you remember, Julius Caesar himself was assassinated and he was betrayed by Brutus. And it's usually in these types of political assassinations, it's usually people who are close to the situation, who are even sometimes actually present at the assassination themselves, who then go on to political office and actually take up political power themselves. Would you agree with that, Oli?
Totally. I tell you, when you look at the, from time to time, it's like they need to statue an example. If their things are getting a bit out of control,
yep,
they sort of mark the territory, and they do it sometimes very openly. That is the way they took out JFK, right out in the open, in front of cameras, in front of people, in front of the whole world. But what they did was they made a statement saying, we can take out anyone, anywhere, at any time, so you better back off. And when you look at these political assassinations, it's almost like there are two conspiracies, one of the actual assassination and then one that follows after, and that is like a conspiracy of silence.
Yes.
It's the official story and nothing else. They would point at the patsy, it was the patsy, it was the patsy, it was the patsy, and that would be it. There would be no outcry from the country's politicians. There would be no demand for justice or
yes,
truth. There would just be silence. And this is not because that the normal politicians and the people in so-called power positions know the details of the assassination, but they know the power behind it. And yes, they know if they don't shape up or stay quiet or stay in line, they can be the next one in line.
Yeah. Now, you know, bringing this whole subject up to today's era, what I'd just like to say to the listeners is that there was an official inquiry called the Warren Commission, which was really basically a whitewash into the JFK assassination. And what I find absolutely fascinating about the Warren Commission is that a man called Leslie Lynch King was a member of this group that were meant to be telling the American people the results of their investigation into this dreadful assassination. And this Leslie Lynch King became an unelected president of the United States of America. And he was using a fake name, and his name that people know is Gerald Ford. Now, were you aware that Gerald Ford was using a fake name?
No, I was not.
Well, Leslie Lynch King comes from the King family. It's a broken family. And, you know, what happened is that Nixon was implicated and forced out of office through shame, really. I mean, the confidence of the public had been lost due to the Watergate situation. And what happened is that then Leslie Lynch King stepped in as this unelected president because he'd actually been doing the role of vice president. And essentially, if you've got a situation where somebody using a fake name can actually become the president, and most people in America do not even realize that they were ruled over by a president using a fake name, what hope do we have for democracy? Because it's pretty amazing. And if you don't believe me, just do a quick search on the internet, type in Leslie Lynch King Warren Commission, and you'll soon find that that man is actually President Gerald Ford. And then what happened is, of course, that we then had a situation shortly after then that George Bush Sr., who's the father of George W. Bush, he actually got the top job at the CIA. I believe that he was in the job not very long. I think he was there for about 2 years or less than 2 years, just over 2 years. And then, of course, he then became president himself after being the vice president to Ronald Reagan. Now, have you looked into the situation involving the Hinckley family and John Hinckley and the Ronald Reagan assassination attempt?
I have. But I would just like to say that the reason I think that why the JFK assassination is so important to look into, because it's like 50 years ago and many people say, but come on, why even bother? The reason is that the group that so violently took his life and took him out,
yes,
are people that are still in power. It's the same power structure that knocked him out that had been in power ever since. It started, just like you said, the world would have looked totally different,
yes,
had JFK lived, had Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King. But this power of very brutal war machine that took over there have stayed in power and just changed the front face. So I would say JFK was the last real elected president, even though there was some fraud involved in his election as well. But the whole long line of presidents following all the way up until today have just been different faces in front of the same very, very violent war machine that is,
yes,
just trying to crush the whole world.
Yeah. Now, in this broadcast, we've used this term "they" quite a lot. And we've also,
yeah,
used the term "elite." And again, for the benefit of the younger listeners and the people that have stumbled on our broadcast for the first time, there's hundreds of thousands of people who do that every single year. What I should say is that when we say "they," very often, not all the time, but very often, we are referring to these very, very ancient families who actually sit on the thrones of the European monarchies. And the primary families are the Saxe-Coburg-Gothas and also the Schleswig-Holsteins. And I believe that the Schleswig-Holsteins are in control of the Danish royal throne, and they're also very powerful in industry in not only Denmark but also Germany as well. And they hire people to be the interface between them and the political arena, because officially what they always say is that they say, oh, well, we're just, you know, a royal family and we have no influence over, you know, the political arena. And the types of people that they employ are agencies, and one of the most successful agencies in this particular department and this area of diplomatic relations between royal families and political organizations is Kissinger and Associates. Have you actually done any research on Henry Kissinger?
Oh, yes. This man is so, so central. I mean, he makes Adolf Hitler look like a schoolboy. It is this man is unreal. He, George Bush.
Ole, we should say to the listeners that Henry Kissinger was not born in the United States. As far as I'm aware, he was actually born in Germany.
He was indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
He is so central in, I mean, I cannot count. I mean, the number of deaths that he is involved in personally is unreal. He is so central in this whole global cabal, I would say. And
did you know that his Kissinger and Associates agency was partly funded by the Rockefellers?
Yeah, it's the same. This is the thing. The more you look into these things, the more you see, my God, they're connected. It doesn't matter if you look into a mass shooting or a financial collapse somewhere, or a country being taken over by the World Bank or International Monetary Fund, or a civil war there, or Operation Condor, or Operation Yes. Phoenix. You look into it, it just, after a while, you come back to the same group again, behind the scenes, the same. And this, the reason why I focus so much on Operation 40 is because this is a team, it's changed names many times over the years, and constellations and so on. They educated new assassins and so on, but it's the core group have been used since the early 1960s all the way up until today, together in coalition with the so-called Stay Behind Gladio network and so on.
Yes.
Where they're central in terrorism today. I tell you, after 30 years, I don't think there is such a thing as a terrorist, the one that we are being told are terrorizing the world. It's insiders. They're inside jobs done to create total chaos where they can come with a solution. Where they, and the solution is every single time that we have to give up any type of freedom and rights and these things, and we will be controlled more and more by robocops and drones and satellites and GPS chips and
yes,
digital currency, and also killed. I mean, they really want to get rid of a lot of us.
Yes.
Through chemtrails, through vaccinations, these awful, awful, awful vaccinations. I really beg people from the bottom of my heart, please do not give your children these vaccines. Some of them are in the patents, are labeled as weapons of mass destruction in the patents. I mean, it's unreal. So please don't pump your children full of it, and study, really get into what are in these vaccines before you put it into your kids or your teens or yourself, because they're really created to destroy a big part of the global population. Awful stuff.
Now, coming back to the assassination of Olaf Palme, am I saying his name right? Palme,
yeah.
Now, Sweden is a fascinating country because for many, many years, King Gustav V of Sweden was the most senior royal active Freemason in Europe. We've got Queen Elizabeth II, who is the grand patroness of World International Freemasonry, but she actually has her own kind of quasi-Masonic cult called the Order of the Garter, and that's really the extent of her ritual activity. She doesn't actually attend any of the ceremonies at the Grand Lodge in Queen Street in London. What she does is she relies on, I believe he's her cousin or nephew, which is the Duke of Kent, and he actually dresses up in the Masonic uniform and actually attends the Grand Lodge of England. Now, Sweden had a policy of sterilization of Romani gypsy people, of people with dark hair, and people who didn't fit with the kind of racial identity that we nowadays associate with Sweden, which is people with fair hair and light blue eyes. Were you aware that this official government policy was going on right up until 1979 in Sweden?
I know about this. I also know that there was a lot of the microchipping going on, you know, where Olof Palme was involved in this as well. Olof Palme is a very, very strange character once you start looking into him. His whole family constellation with a lot of connection back into Nazi Germany on a very, very high level.
I see.
And he was a, I would suggest that he was a very multi-faced personality. You know, he was the what do you call it, the protector of the weak. He was the guy that introduced the Swedish model of how to equal rights for everyone, mm-hmm. equal, you yeah. know, everybody should earn the same. But at the same time, he was also part, he was one of the members of the Bilderberg Group. He was part of the Committee of 300, and he was very, very loyal working to the bankers, the whole banking elite and the global elite as well.
So, I see. So why in a nutshell, or it doesn't need to be in a nutshell, I mean, you can describe it in as much detail as you want. Why do you think, Ole, that he was actually assassinated?
I tell you, I gave 9 hours interview on Red Eyes Creations about this assassination because it is extremely complex on many, many different layers that are pointing in different directions. So I would very much like to not go into this in great detail. What I can say is that it was an assassination ordered from the absolute highest level, carried out by an international team of assassins with local backup from Swedish police.
I see.
And in my book, Coup d'etat in slow motion, I got photos, names of everybody involved in the assassinations, who, the shooters, the walkie-talkie men, who were driving the cars, how it was financed, how they flew in and out of the country, all of these type of things. So now, absolutely not the official story, which is a lone crazy guy.
Now, my next question is, do you consider the royal families of Europe, which is basically one family because they're all intermarried and interrelated with each other, do you consider them to be the richest and most powerful? Do you consider them to be the elite pulling the strings from behind the scenes?
I know little about that to answer. I in the international global power pyramid, I go up to the level of the Bilderberg Group, the Council on Foreign Relations, mm-hmm. the Trilateral Commission, and then I leave the rest to people like you and other experts, because this world of conspiracy is so, so big, and you need to focus on some area, and I focused on the street level, you know, the assassins I've tracked down, assassins, agents, you name it, I've tracked them. But that is my focus, so I cannot answer that.
Mm. Now, I just want to ask you about this man that you did actually mention earlier in the broadcast, and it is this disgusting multiple gun assassination that took place, and it was perpetrated by a man, and you can see his photograph on the internet to this day, and he's dressed as a Freemason, and it took place in, I believe, Norway. And I think that there was 26 dead people, and it was one of these mass shooting situations. He also planted a bomb, apparently, as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about this so-called Oslo bomber?
It is absolutely not true. Anything about the official story, an absolute lie.
I see.
This was a massive, big false flag operation, and carried out. It was carried out by the military, knocking out the parliament in Oslo.
Yeah.
Where you can see it, the empty. Everything was prepared. The streets were closed off. The buildings were empty, and then they blew the whole thing up.
Oh.
Absolutely no real casualties, nothing like that. Would
you describe this man as being like a modern version of a patsy like Lee Harvey Oswald?
Total patsy, mind control patsy. Mm-hmm. And the shooter on the island where he was blamed to have done that, when you look at the evidence, that makes absolutely no sense. And the young people that were there also gave testimonies about multiple shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole setup, this is the awful thing when these things happen, is that they let them get on with it. You know, this guy was walking around shooting for more than an hour. Mm-hmm. Without anybody interrupting, you know.
Yeah.
Just walking around, automatic rifles, just killing people left, right, and center, young children or teenagers. But the whole story about this thing is an absolute lie. He was absolutely not doing this on his own, but he was a mind-controlled patsy taking the fall for it.
I see.
And the SWAT team that came to the island after such a long time, when they came, they knew his name. They had him on the they were in contact for almost an hour with him on the cell phone while he was walking around shooting. And when they came to the island, they called out his name. And he, as soon as they called his name, he just dropped the gun and.
Saturdays and Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back. This is Chris Everard broadcasting live on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, 90.7 FM, Denver, Colorado, and also worldwide, truthfrequencyradio.com. And I present Gods of the Ancient World on the Enigma Channel. And I've also been featured in a new 42-part TV series about the occult world. And you can watch that on the Enigma channel. That's enigmatv.com. And if you sign up on the website, they'll send you a free TV guide with clickable links to all kinds of documentaries and TV shows and also full-length movies. They're the types of things that get deleted and censored from video sharing websites. And for this second hour, we are actually now being broadcast live, Radio Calabria in the south of Italy, all of our Italian and English friends in the south of Italy there. And we're also being broadcast on AM, that's medium wave, at Radio Stirling in Scotland. And my special guest is Mr. Ole Demigod, who is an author. And Ole, if you want to tell people what your website is again.
My website is lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com.
Okay.
And my book is Coup d'etat in slow motion.
Coup d'etat in slow motion. Now, I'd like to finish today's broadcast just by dedicating this last segment of the show to do with the assassination 1980. It happened in December 1980. It's probably the most notorious assassination of a British person. He's easily one of the most famous people in history, and that is John Lennon, who was gunned down outside this very, very weird, spooky building called the Dakota Building in Manhattan, Central Park West. The Dakota Building was featured in a movie called Rosemary's Baby that was actually directed by Roman Polanski, and Roman Polanski's wife actually suffered a murder on herself and her unborn baby, and several of her friends were murdered at a house in Cielo Drive in California. And some of the events of the murder surrounding Sharon Tate, who was the wife of Roman Polanski, some of those events actually mirror the activities that we see portrayed in the film Rosemary's Baby. And most of that film takes place inside the Dakota Building. And this is the building where Yoko Ono chose for John Lennon to live. They eventually had a son there, Sean Lennon. And it sits on 72nd Street, right above 72nd Street subway station. And if you've actually done any research into the occult, you'll discover that 72 is a very, very important number. And you see it in the medieval and pre-medieval books of black magic, and also the post-medieval books of black magic, which are generally called grimoires. And in those books, you will see a pantheon of demonic spirits that all describe, and they have their names, and they have their different ranks in the astral planes of hell. And there are 72 of them. And 72 also plays a major role in the full name of God, which is known as the Shem Ham Foresh. And they actually lived at apartment number 72 as well, inside the Dakota Building. And some of the other residents of the Dakota Building include Boris Karloff, who's most famous for playing Frankenstein. And they actually got their apartment from Robert Ryan, who was a Hollywood actor, and he'd actually starred in a movie called The Wild Bunch. And for some reason, he had a very, very serious disease that all of a sudden robbed him of his faculties, and he was going blind. And that, again, mirrors some of the things that went on in the film Rosemary's Baby, which was based on the exact same apartment number 72 in the Dakota Building. And outside the Dakota Building, December 1980, John Lennon was shot. Now, Ole, have you done much research on the John Lennon assassination?
I sure have. Can I just say now, when you talk about subway stations and occult things,
yes,
and movies before, there was the year just before Olof Palme was shot, there was a Russian film director called Andrei Tarkovsky, and he made a very, very odd film around, it was called The Victim, and it's filmed exactly on location where Olof Palme was latest shot.
I see.
In one instance, you can see this the stairs, where the very famous stairs in Stockholm now, because that is where the assassin ran off. But in this film, the camera goes from these stairs and go downwards, and then it's total chaos. They're like people lying around, and their cars thrown over, turned over, and so on. And then it goes down to the pavement exactly where he was shot, and there the blood starts running out in the film. I mean, right on the spot where he was later shot. And he, Olof Palme, before he died, he gave his one of his colleagues, Pierre Chury, the task to help Andrei Tarkovsky come to Sweden and film this one. Very, very odd.
Oh, that's strange.
And then also in the subway station, they erected an obelisk exactly in the position where the man ran off as well. There's some very odd obelisk that was erected about a year after the assassination. And I found that is one thing that occurs again.
Yes.
And again, in different, when they take someone out, within a year, about 100 meters from wherever it took place, there's an obelisk erected, or there's the eternal flame, or something like that.
Uh-huh, I see.
But in Stockholm as well, there's one subway station, not very far from the site of the assassination. It's called Kungsträdgårdens subway station. You go down there, my God, it is unreal. So all of it are Freemasonry symbols and these masks, these dragon faces. You also got, You know, one of the things that really got very many people upset, was part of the reason why they took Olof Palme, was that he gave away the rights to the oil in the out in the Nordic Sea.
Yes.
He gave it to Norway. He let Norway take that. And on the what do you call it, in the subway station, the thing you stand on,
the platform. There's
the platform, exactly. There's an oil an oil drum painted in the Swedish colors, put down into the platform, and then it looks like black blood that is running out underneath, and it goes over to a big statue of Zeus.
Zeus.
And Zeus, yeah. And the whole thing, when you look into it, there's you know, the creation of the New World Order, that everything is in Freemasonry symbols and these. I've got loads of photos in my book, Coup d'etat in slow motion, about this. Also because I managed to get into the headquarters of the Swedish Freemasons, uh-huh. and they didn't know who I was, but the person who was taking care of the building, he mentioned, you know, just like, blah, 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 and then he said, I'll pre-temple this subway station. And I was like, what did you say? and I said, what? And there is this, the headquarters are just like 200 meters from this subway station. And when you walk down the stairs to go into the subway station, on the left-hand side, there's like a 4 meter high, massive door, double door, made in copper. And I tell you, it's on the same, it is on the same level on the ground that a tunnel to this Freemasonry headquarters would be. And the whole area, there's this tunnel that I've heard many people talk about, it just crosses right underneath a plaza, a little square,
yeah.
and then surrounded by banking buildings, all of them owned by and controlled by Freemasons in Sweden. So
wow.
I tell you, I had people from Swedish TV4 trying to place out cameras down in this subway station because it closes at night. And when you look at what is going on downstairs, because some of these masks that are on the wall, they have blood coming out of their eyes, you know, and it's not dry even. I've been down there several times, and sometimes the blood has not dried yet.
Oh,
so
weird.
There's some weird things going on down there, I tell you.
Wow. Well, I mean, if we look at the John Lennon assassination, it's now very, very clear from a series of interviews that were done with Mark David Chapman by a journalist in the USA who traveled up to the detention center, the prison where Mark David Chapman, the alleged lone gunman assassin who killed John Lennon, is now serving a multiple life sentence, or a sentence which it'll never be released from. And in these interviews, Mark David Chapman actually admits that he actually performed a satanic ritual in his home in Hawaii to bring strength to him from Lucifer to give him the courage to actually fire the bullets into John Lennon. So there is a satanic kind of occult link to the John Lennon assassination as well.
I tell you, when I come to a crime scene, I always use Farmer Brown logic. You know, many of these assassinations are no-brainers, even though they're supposed to be a mystery after many, many years. They are no-brainers, like the Robert Kennedy assassination, for instance,
yeah.
where you have this the man that is sentenced for the crime. The closest he ever got towards Robert Kennedy was a meter 30 in front of him.
Uh-huh.
His name was Sirhan. He had a revolver with eight bullets in it.
Okay. Yeah, now, Sirhan was the subject of a British documentary that was made about 1998-1999. And in this British documentary, it actually says, look, you know, Sirhan was really a programmed patsy, rather like Lee Harvey Oswald.
Like Chapman as well,
yep,
I tell you.
That's right. And I showed the documentary to Anthony Hilder, when he came to my studio when we were making the first Illuminati documentary, which you can watch on the Enigma channel. In actual fact, there's several volumes of my Illuminati films on the Enigma channel right now, where there's a virtual cinema. And amazingly, Anthony Hilder turned to me and he said, listen, he said, they tried to pin the actual RFK assassination on me at one point. And so he took a copy on VHS of this documentary that had been made by British television. And, you know, he has a copy of that because it exonerates him from being blamed. And I think that what goes on with a lot of these assassinations is that they try and use these assassinations to kind of mop up and clean up a situation and try and put people in the frame and blame them who they just want out of the picture.
Yeah, sometimes that's true.
Yeah.
But if we go back to just the evidence, he had a revolver with 8 shots. Somewhere around 12 to 13 shots were fired. Uh-huh. So was Robert Kennedy hit straight from the front where Sirhan was standing? No, he was hit from the back and to the right. Three mm-hmm. bullets, and the last one was point blank to his head. Mm-hmm. So it's totally impossible that he could be the shooter. I mean, even my 9-year-old daughter can say that. I mean, it's impossible.
Yeah.
How could he do it? He could not.
Yeah.
And so then you take it to the next level. So who was standing behind him to the right? Because that is where the shots were fired from. And that would just lead you to a totally different picture.
Now,
when it comes to John Lennon,
yeah,
you have the official story where Mark Chapman was standing waiting for them. Yoko Ono and John had just arrived in the limo from the studio. They had just recorded their comeback album, or John Lennon's comeback, and he was planning a big, big peace tour in the States, and which was most probably had followed with a tour in Europe and so on. So here was a man that millions of people were listening to,
yes.
And this is when they start fearing them, you know, because here was somebody who stood up for peace. And not, you know, not going to war, of love, and give love a chance, and unity,
yeah.
And love beyond borders and colors and races, totally against their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is why he was taken out at this point.
Yeah.
So you got Mark Chapman was standing to the right when they left the limo. Yoko Ono went first, and John Lennon followed like 5-6 meters behind her. Then when he started entering the Dakota building, several shots were fired. He went down. Yoko Ono came out screaming. He crawled in, and they took him to the hospital where he was later declared dead. Now, you look at the crime scene. So since Mark Chapman was standing to the right, of course, all the shots were fired from the right. Absolutely not. All the shots were fired straight from the left. And some of them were so close together so that they had problems seeing how many bullets there were because the trajectory was so close on some of them.
Mm-hmm.
So an obvious question would be, who was standing to the left? And this night, there was a doorman, a very nice-looking gentleman in his early 70s, late 60s, glasses, nicely dressed and so on, by the name of José Perdomo. Now, he's the guy who is said to have run over to Chapman, taken the gun from him and said, you just shot Lennon, you just shot Lennon, after which Mark Chapman turned into like a zombie, just like these mind control
Nazis
do.
Because
rarely do they trust a mind control person to do the actual assassinations. They use them to be the fall guys.
Yeah.
And this is why very often they cannot remember anything the hours before the event, and then after their memories start going. And when they start talking about whatever has occurred, it's almost like a loop, a recorded message that just keeps repeating.
Mm-hmm.
No emotions, no nothing. You know, they just tell the story as they have been programmed to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But this José, can I just say that this José Perdomo was not just anyone, because for 10 years almost, he was one of the highest ranking officers in, here it comes, Operation 40. You know, so here we have one of the absolute top assassins globally being the doorman this day.
I mean,
how big are the chances?
Now, are you saying that José Perdomo was in with all of those other chaps like Barry Seal And he'd actually been involved in things such as Bay of Pigs.
Yeah, big time, big time, big time.
So how did it come about that he was the doorman at the Dakota building? Do you think that he was just doing that job genuinely and then he got hired again by the CIA? Or do you think that he was deliberately placed into that job just for the specific reason of monitoring John Lennon, keeping tabs on him, and then that night putting bullets into his body?
Totally. It was a total setup. He was only mm-hmm. there to carry out the assassination. That was it. Nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, he disappeared out in oblivion. I do not know what he's done later on. He was one of these exiled Cubans that was recruited in Miami in the early 1960s as part of Operation 40. He was one of the founding members, if you want to say, one of the first ones there. And then he was later used for this one. Mm-hmm. But he was part of many, many as well.
So the assassination of John Lennon took place in 1980. And you say that Jose Podemo was in his early 70s. Is that right?
Late 60s, early 70s. At least that's what he looks like.
I see. So he would be dead by now. Is there any trace of this man? What did he do? Did he continue doing the job of being the doorman at the Dakota?
Absolutely not. I mean, he did the hit and disappeared. He did the hit and went, poof, gone. He was not working there for a long time before either. So he was there, he did the job, and goodbye, farewell.
And then, I see.
If now, you follow the template, then very often these people get taken out themselves as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up in a foundation under a skyscraper or being fish food or something like that.
I see. And what is your interpretation of why Mark David Chapman had so many copies of the book Catcher in the Rye? What on earth was going on there? The man could not pass a bookstore without going in and buying a copy of Catcher in the Rye. Why was that?
I don't know. I do know that when they set these patsies up, I mean, the main thing is that they work in media, that they look weird, that they do weird things,
yeah.
that they say weird things. And so part of setting him up would be to buy this book. But this book has appeared in other assassinations as well, or assassination attempts, because Hinckley had one as well, if I don't remember wrong.
Oh, really? Hinckley, who is the man who he did an attempted assassination on Ronald Reagan?
Yeah, and that
he,
was...
He also had Catcher in the Rye as well, did he?
As far as I remember, yes. And Hinckley was a friend of... one of the Bush sons, not Jeb Bush, I can't remember his name now, mm-hmm. just the evening before he was invited to dinner and family. And Chapman had connections with the Bush family as well.
You're saying that the man who is serving a prison sentence and is accused and is even admitted for killing John Lennon has ties to the Bush family?
As far as I've been able to find out, I cannot guarantee if the information I've been given is correct, but yes.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing.
And it is.
Do you see any of these lone gunmen or any of these patsies, do you see any satanic ritual kind of occult activity like we see with Mark David Chapman? Is that a common thing that you've come across?
No, not really.
Mm-hmm. I see. Now, you mentioned the peace movement. I think it's fair to say to the listeners that John Lennon also, when he appeared on various American talk shows like the Dick Cavett Show and some of these really big mainstream TV shows, he actually asked the hosts whether he could bring on supplementary guests. One of those guests was a member of the Black Panthers. And what I find fascinating is that Fred Hampton and many of the other Black Panthers were actually assassinated by agents of the FBI around this same era of history.
Yeah, true. the FBI is very central in these assassinations as well. The Martin Luther King and so on, and many, many of these mass shootings and false flag operations, they're the ones equipping, training, and getting a lot of the organization done before these false flag and assassinations as well.
Mm-hmm.
So these agencies, like, we think that they're there to protect us. I'm sorry to be the bringer of bad news. They are very, rogue elements within these organizations that are used in a totally different arena.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why it's called the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, because it's an agency more or less for hire. You can hire them if you're a company to do whatever dirty business needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. So, now, we've only got a few minutes left, Ole. Just to round up the subjects which we've covered, you mentioned earlier in the broadcast that there were some people that were linked in some way to the JFK and or the RFK assassinations. And you said that one of those people is also linked to the assassination of Martin Luther King. And the Martin Luther King assassination is one of those assassinations that's been kind of overshadowed because we had both the Kennedy brothers assassinated, in a very, very short period of time. A lot of people, you know, they don't really know very much about Martin Luther King. Can you just tell the listeners just, you know, the basic nuts and bolts of how that assassination took place? Was there anyone involved in the JFK assassination as well as the Martin Luther King hit?
Yes, there was, and the Martin Luther King assassination took place just 1 month before the Robert Kennedy assassination. It was the killing of JFK was in 1963, and both the assassination of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy was in 1968. And I think that there's a very big possibility that Robert Kennedy would have been elected president and that Martin Luther King would have been vice president. So this was something they really feared. And the FBI especially was very much involved trying to take out Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
So can I just say that one thing, when you look at the templates of how these things are carried out, it's very important to understand that the investigation that is put there after these assassinations are carried out are part of the crime. They are set up with people that the power elite, they're loyal to them, and they're doing their dirty work. And the only task they have is to push to the sides all normal, honest, decent police detectives and investigators. Mm-hmm. They're pushed to the sides, and their own investigation just moves in as soon as the shots are fired. And the only task they have is to point, they went that way, they went that way, they went that way. Anything but into the real truth. And then if they don't get away with whatever false explanation of the assassination, if they don't get away with that, then after a long time they will elect a so-called commission, like the Warren Commission.
I see.
Or they will call it something, the Truce for Liberation of the Population Committee or something like that. But that commission is also part of the crime, and their task is to drag it out for a year or so, and then write thousands of documents saying absolutely nothing. And the only thing they would do is investigate the investigation, not the crime itself. Mm-hmm. And the conclusion every single time will be that, well, the investigation made some mistakes here and there, but we've done a great job, and this is it. Case closed. So following the old Roman